When these lines start being drawn with the help of computers, where they can be so exact that they can break up a bedroom if they wanted to, it is hurting our nation.
Yes, it is. Especially when the courts allow only Republicans to do
it. I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN, we'll talk about Ohio today, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, yeah, we'll talk about New York too, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. I neglected to say we will probably talk about Wisconsin as well. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and all your favorite podcast sites except for Spotify. Blanketing Planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. I know my guest is already standing by, so I want to be quick about this, but I want to get this in, Desi Doyen.
Okay.
You have, I know our listeners have probably heard, since it's been getting quite a bit of coverage over the past 24 to 48 hours, so I don't think I need to go into great detail on this for the moment, but a trove of text messages from just after the 2020 election have leaked out of the House January 6 committee's collection of more than 2,000 or so text messages that were sent to and from Donald Trump's then chief of staff, Mark Meadows, from a whole bunch of Republican members of Congress, making it very clear, as if it wasn't already clear, that they were attempting to steal the 2020 election pretty much as soon as the polls closed on Election Day. Arguably even before Election Day, but these text messages make it very clear. There's a whole bunch of folks in the so-called Freedom Caucus in particular who were scheming and trying to come up with all different ways to steal the election, that it became clear as of Election Day, Election Night, that Donald Trump had lost. Now, as I say, it's getting quite a bit of coverage elsewhere, so I'm not going to go into all of the details on all of these texts that are coming out now. Maybe we will in the days ahead. But I've been saying this for months now. I really do not understand the corporate media and the Democrats in particular, their allergy, it seems like, to calling this what it was. An attempt, thankfully a failed one, but a clear attempt to steal the 2020 presidential election. And they did all sorts of things to try to do it. And yet, I still keep seeing both the media and the Democrats sort of dancing around that word, steal. Even now, even with this clear evidence through thousands of text messages that Trump and the Republicans tried before our very eyes to steal a presidential election. And yet, they keep using words like, oh, they were trying to overturn the results, undermine the results. They tried to question the results.
They were skeptical about the results.
Exactly.
Yeah. Never using the word an attempted coup, a nearly successful coup.
A theft. It would have been a stolen election had they had their way of it. And you could bet your bottom dollar that if the things had been reversed, that Republicans would be talking night and day about the attempted theft of the election by Democrats. So I just wanted to offer congratulations today to The Hill, to Rebecca Beach at The Hill, for coming up with a new euphemism for stealing an election that I have not yet seen from the media. This is, again, Rebecca Beach at The Hill this morning. Documents and texts stemming from the House investigation of January 6, 2021. Offer new details about the extent that House Republicans, particularly members of the Freedom Caucus, were involved in plans to unwind the 2020 election.
Oh, that sounds kind of pleasant, actually.
They were just trying to unwind it.
It was just a little thing, nothing much.
Even as lawyers at the White House had warned them that their proposals could be illegal. Because, you know, unwinding elections is apparently illegal. So is stealing elections. That's actually illegal. But, you know, to unwind the 2020 election, totally normal. Just, you know, sometimes you have to unwind an election. Desi, I've decided next month I'm not going to pay you. I'm going to keep that money for myself. But don't worry, I'm not stealing your paycheck. I'm going to unwind your paycheck. I'm going to unwind my promise to pay you. I hope you have no problem if I overturn your paycheck.
You're skeptical about a paycheck.
Seriously, I'm going to put it in my bank instead because I am undermining your paycheck. I'm overturning it. Anyway, seriously, folks, words matter. I mean, do you have any doubt that if it was reversed, Republicans would be demanding criminal charges for a Democratic president and members of his own party in Congress for attempting to steal an election? I mean, they didn't even have an election stolen from them, and they're claiming that it was stolen. Stop the steal.
Exactly. Even after all this time, they're still trying to say that, like, they have to overturn the 2020 election.
It was bad enough when the corporate media could not call out Donald Trump's lies as lies.
Yeah.
You know, but describing an attempt to steal an election as simply trying to unwind it? Are you kidding me? All right. Well, anyway, we will catch up with all of the news and the fallouts from the attempt to unwind the 2020 election in the days ahead, I'm sure. And by the way, I just want to say kudos to Talking Points Memo. They are the only moderately major outlet that I have seen who regularly refers to the Trump GOP attempt to steal the election. And they're very well read by a lot of media. I don't know why others aren't picking it up. But at least TPM is getting it right. They do it consistently in pretty much all of their coverage. And it would be nice if other media outlets began to do the same. But by the way, if you happen to see any such outlets that deserve kudos for calling the attempted election theft what it was, please feel free to send me a link via email to bradcast@bradblog.com. I'd be interested if there's anyone else other than apparently me and TPM who are doing so. Or, by the way, if you see a new euphemism that we have not heard before, you know, like this one, unwind the election, I'd also love to see that so that we can give the proper discredit where it is due, as we are today, to Rebecca Beach at The Hill. All right, but, well, speaking of stealing elections, like it or not, and I wouldn't blame you at all if you did not, after the first primary in the nation kicked off last month in Texas on March 1 and resulted in tens of thousands of rejected vote-by-mail ballots by longtime, perfectly legal Texas voters, after a new voter suppression law was enacted by the Texas GOP last year, the midterm primary season is scheduled to kick off in full, beginning in just days from now. The month of May, barring any last-minute changes by the courts, which we will get to with my guest in a moment, We'll see primary elections in Indiana and Ohio on May 3rd, Nebraska and West Virginia on May 10, Kentucky, Oregon, Pennsylvania, and Idaho on May 17, and in Alabama, Arkansas, and of course, my always favorite state of Georgia on May 24. June, August, and September promise to be equally busy as voters head to the polls for the first time in all of these states under newly redistricted congressional and state legislative maps in the first congressional and state elections to follow the 2020 decennial census. And all of the newly reworked maps to be used for the next decade that come with it. And after the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling, this is the first election after the first the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in 2019, that federal courts may no longer play any role in adjudicating questions of partisan gerrymandering in the states. Concerns about that, the high court decided, no matter how much such gerrymanders may fall afoul of the Federal Voting Rights Act, concerns about that may now only be decided by state courts, not federal courts. The process of drawing new maps across the nation has been a bumpy one over the past year, to say the least, but where Republicans focused on a broad national scheme to win state legislatures back in 2010 in order to gerrymander the hell out of states where they controlled both the legislature and the governor's mansion, in a successful decade-long gerrymander brought about by their so-called Red Map project led by Karl Rove, Democrats have been trying at least to push back in this new cycle with at least some success when it comes to redistricting. Before the new cycle got underway, many Democrats and small-d democracy lovers had feared that even more extreme gerrymandering by Republicans this cycle would make it perhaps impossible for Democrats to ever control the House of Representatives again, much less state legislatures, no matter how many votes they got, after Republicans got into the habit of using sophisticated computer mapping and algorithms to select their own voters rather than the other way around. But to the surprise of many, I think it's fair to say, we'll see if my guest agrees, thanks to a number of state courts and a number of new initiatives, often ballot initiatives adopted by voters to bar partisan gerrymanders in a number of states over the past 10 years, the newly adopted maps haven't been quite as bad for Democrats or democracy as many had initially feared for a number of reasons. In recent weeks, however, a number of new developments in several states, including Ohio and Florida, where Republicans are playing hardball in defiance of voters and state Supreme Courts, and, yes, in deep blue New York State, where it is Democrats who are attempting to play hardball. The predicted balance of power from all of this in both Congress and state legislatures remains uncertain right now, to say the least. All of this comes as democracy itself seems to hang in the balance, as the forces of autocracy, both here in the U.S., yes, and around the world, continue to rise, as we've discussed on this program recently, for example, with Amy Slipowitz of Freedom House, whose annual reports on the global state of democracy have found autocracy rising and democracy in decline worldwide, and yes, here in the U.S., over the past 16 consecutive years. Among the reasons for that, here in the U.S., as cited by Slipowitz and her latest report from Freedom House, attacks on voting rights and the increasingly extreme use of partisan gerrymandering across the country. So, with critical midterm primaries about to begin across the nation, will democracy strike back this year and over the coming decade, at least in terms of fair House and state legislative maps? Or is the U.S. destined to continue its small-d democratic decline over the coming decade? All very small and easy questions to answer for my guest today, who literally wrote the book on the extreme GOP gerrymanders of the last decade and has been busy warning about similar and even worse such gerrymanders in both red and blue states for the next decade, beginning in this year's midterms. Joining us now is David Daly, a senior fellow at fairvote.org, where he continues the most important fight that we have in this country, as I see it, for fair elections for all and the need to end extreme gerrymandering, which he documented in his first book with an unpronounceable on the radio name. So we just call it Rat Flipped, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. And now in his new book, which we can pronounce on radio, Unrigged, How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. By the way, Dave Daly's work has also appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times, The Atlantic, Washington Post, The Boston Globe, and CNN, where he wrote about all of this just last week. Not to mention, of course, by way of full disclosure, at Salon, where he used to be editor-in-chief and my boss there for a number of years when I was a regular contributor. But he's not my boss anymore, so I may or may not agree with a few points he's been making of late when it comes to gerrymandering and democracy in these United States. Oh, Dave Daly, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Such a pleasure to be back. And you didn't have to agree with me even when I was your boss.
Oh,
I mean, come on.
Now you tell me. Okay, well,
now
that's... All right, listen, before we get to where we may or may not agree on a number of these matters, I was on the road last week and trying, if not always succeeding, to sort of look the other way from the news to give my brain a rest. But I did see several disturbing developments in the previously wildly gerrymandered states of Ohio and Florida, and I'm hoping you might be able to sort of help simplify those states for us a bit today. Let me start in Ohio, as I understand it. It has had a wildly gerrymandered map for both Congress and its state legislature over the past 10 years, but back in 2015, I think, voters voted by a huge 70% majority to make the state more fair, with a new redistricting commission and state constitutional mandates requiring that the maps in the state more closely mirror the closely divided partisan balance of the state. Now, the GOP majority state Supreme Court has now, I believe, rejected four attempts by the redistricting commission to propose maps that were challenged by Democrats, with the primaries coming up, I believe, next month in Ohio. So where does anything stand at this hour in Ohio when it comes to both the congressional maps and the state legislative maps there?
Now, it's a great question. I mean, Ohio is a mess. Ohio does not have a state legislative map, does not have a congressional map, and here we are at the end of April. You're right. Voters there in 2015 and then again in 2018 established new guardrails and guidelines for redistricting in the state. It had been wildly gerrymandered the decade before, Republican supermajorities in both chambers, Republicans taking 12 of 16 seats, that's 75% of the congressional delegation, in what had been a long-time bellwether, that's now probably a 53-54% Republican state. And Republicans effectively, lawlessly ignored what was in that constitutional amendment. When it came to the state maps, the commission simply said, we can't really do this, and they punted the job back to the gerrymandered legislature to draw the maps. And the congressional maps that they came up with have effectively been probably a 13-2 Republican map. Ohio loses one seat because of reapportionment and population moving elsewhere in the country, so that seat is gone.
13, let me just underscore that. 13-2. You say 13-2. So 13 Republican Republican majority districts and two Democratic majority districts in a state that is pretty close to 50-50. Republicans have a bit of an edge, like you said, 53-54%, but 13 seats to two?
13 seats. And well, one of the new requirements is partisan balance.
Yeah.
And so what Republicans said was, well, we win about 85% of the statewide races over the last decade, so we ought to take 85% of the congressional seats for the next decade.
But they won that because the map was gerrymandered.
Of course, they laughed at this now. And so Ohio's Supreme Court, which has four Republicans and three Democrats,
has
rejected both the state maps and the congressional maps every time that they have come before the court.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a very brave Republican Chief Justice,
mm-hmm.
a woman named Maureen O'Connor, who has joined with the three Democrats, and they have issued a series of 4-3 rulings that have insisted that the commission come back with maps that are constitutional. The governor of the state, Governor DeWine, has in fact admitted that perhaps we could have followed a more constitutional process.
And I should note that Mike DeWine...
Good for him. His son is on the court.
Yes, exactly. He's the governor, Mike DeWine, governor of Ohio. He's actually on the redistricting committee, as I understand it. He continues to vote for these maps, which are continuously rejected by the court. And, as you note, his own son sits on the state Supreme Court, who has not recused himself from these rulings?
He has not. you can't make it up except for the fact that, like, there's something similar in North Carolina, where there's a Supreme Court justice whose dad is the Speaker of the House, right?
Oh.
So this stuff just goes on and on and on. But so Ohio is in an interesting spot. As you noticed in your intro, we're getting pretty close to primary dates.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we need some districts. We need candidates.
Yeah.
We need to have elections to choose who these candidates are. And this is where the game gets interesting. So Republicans went to the federal courts,
mm-hmm.
which have become much more pro-Republican over the course of the last decade,
thanks mm-hmm.
to the Federal Society and the way that they've been packing the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, listen, we have to have some elections here. And the federal court has largely stayed out of it, but they did the other day say, listen, if you guys can't wrap this up by the end of May, we're going to use one of these previous Republican maps. So, as you can imagine,
yeah.
that does not incentivize the Republicans on the commission to get to work drawing a fair map. Instead, they're just not meeting, and they're trying to run out the clock. So the federal court imposes one of the unconstitutional maps that has already been rejected by Ohio's state Supreme Court.
The federal courts are saying, if you can't sort this out, then you're just going to have to use one of the old gerrymandered maps.
And the Republicans are like, no, we couldn't possibly.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that is clearly what they seem to be doing. I had hoped that had changed somehow over the past week, but that does not seem to be the case. All right, speaking of redistricting outrages, let's talk about Florida. Last week in the Sunshine State, Governor Ron DeSantis there seems to have given up all pretense of democracy. As he's clearly preparing for a presidential run in 2024, and he's sort of playing to the autocratic wishes of Donald Trump's MAGA mob, it seems to me. DeSantis, and let me know, do I have this right? DeSantis decided to overrule the GOP majority state legislature's already gerrymandered maps in favor of his own even more gerrymandered map. Again, despite a state ballot initiative that had called for fairer districts. Do I have that right, David Daley? Please tell me I don't.
Ron DeSantis went to the Republican legislature and said, hold my beer, right? They already produced a pretty good Republican gerrymander, and Ron DeSantis said, wait a second, I can do even better than that. So DeSantis rejected the Florida legislature's gerrymander,
mm-hmm.
which was about a 16-12 Republican map for the U.S. House.
Mm-hmm.
And he has designed his own, which is a 20-Republican, 8-Democratic map. And it eliminates 4 Democratic districts, including 2 Voting Rights Act districts that are currently held by black members of Congress.
20-8 Republican to Democratic districts is what
70-30, right?
So I assume Democrats are challenging that in some fashion, but is there anywhere to go? The federal courts won't hear these sorts of cases, I guess. It's got to go to the state Supreme Court. If I recall, Ron DeSantis, after barely winning his first term as governor, ended up packing that state Supreme Court as well.
Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott before him have appointed pretty much the entirety of this Florida Supreme Court. Back in 2015, there were members of the Florida Supreme Court who were willing to overturn the gerrymander that Republicans enacted there back in 2011 as a violation of the state constitution and those fair districts amendments that were passed by voters. But all of those justices who voted in favor of overturning that map are gone. And the justices who were in the minority, the two dissents, one of them is now the Chief Justice, and they are effectively the leaders in the power block. We have already seen what that court is willing to do on voting rights and on the state constitution. When in 2018, more than 64% of voters there, cast ballots on behalf of giving voting rights back to returning citizens and ending felony disenfranchisement there. That state Supreme Court effectively went ahead and enacted a poll tax and nullified what voters did. So this is not a Supreme Court that we should look to for any sort of help when it comes to fair maps.
All of which sort of underscores the argument I suspect we may have when we get to New York here and discussing that state's map, which is also being challenged in court right now. Before we get to that, though, and you wrote about that at CNN last week, what other states at this sort of the last minute here are you watching for, you know, last minute changes or court rulings that will affect congressional elections or legislative elections this fall? I know you recently wrote about the outrage of what the the U.S. Supreme Court did in Wisconsin, for example.
Yes, absolutely. Certainly what the Supreme Court has been eager this cycle to help Republicans and to put their foot on the scale against Democrats. So in Alabama, for example, when a lower court said that the congressional map was a racial gerrymander, the Supreme Court said, no, it's February and it's too close to the elections to enact a new map now, so the old map is going to have to stand. This was 9.5 months before the election.
Right.
Plenty of time to draw a new map.
Right.
In Wisconsin, the other day, the Supreme Court said, well, you drew one additional state Senate seat that a black candidate might win, and you didn't necessarily prove that there was a need for a seventh seat. You didn't prove that six seats weren't enough. So we're going to undo that map, and you're going to have to do a new one. And that was April. So it's like, so there's enough time in April to fix a map when there's perhaps one black district too many, according to this court. If there's a Voting Rights Act violation, no time to remedy that one.
So
that's certainly interesting.
In both cases, there would have been a new black majority district put in place. In Alabama, the U.S. Supreme Court stopped that because it was too close to the election, even though it was months ago. And in Wisconsin, they said they stopped it by saying, even though the primary is coming right up, you have to quickly draw new maps. So they're not even following, they're not even trying anymore, it seems like, at the U.S. Supreme Court to pretend like they're a legitimate judicial body anymore. It's mind-blowing. Dave Daley.
It's heads they win and tails you lose.
Yeah.
You know, they are not even pretending anymore. There are five of us, or six of us, and there's three of you, and we win, you lose, tough toenails.
Yeah, that's what's going on here. And all of which that we've discussed up till now, David, seems to underscore a sort of a debate, an argument that you and I had last time you were on the show a few months ago that I think we may have again now today when we get to New York. But before I do that, since we're running a little long, let me take a quick break. We will come back and we will get to our maybe, I think, disagreement regarding New York and related matters on gerrymandering. David Daly is a senior fellow at fairvote.org and the author of books on why gerrymandering is a terrible thing. I'm going to argue that it is not. At least not right now. Right after this, I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to the Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Democrats may see the red rain coming down this fall, depending on how the last of these unbelievable redistricting fights actually play out. We're now waiting for word from New York. That could make a difference regarding what happens this November. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, speaking with fairvote.org's David Daly, an expert on redistricting and gerrymandering, author of several books to that end. One I can't say on the radio, so we just call it Rat Flipped, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. The newer one called Unrigged, how Americans are battling back to save democracy. Thanks for sticking with me, David. We've talked about what are just plainly outrageous partisan gerrymanders being carried out by Republicans right now in Ohio and Florida, just weeks before, months before, in Florida's case, the primaries are to begin in this new redistricting cycle. Now, moving to New York, as you know, since we discussed this matter when you were on the show several months ago, I have changed my long-held position on gerrymandering, David, over the past year or so, given that I believe democracy itself is now on the line in this country, particularly nationally. And that while I have long objected to extreme gerrymanders, partisan gerrymanders, I believe it's actually now necessary to use them in blue states to try and protect what is left of our democracy, which we'll discuss and or debate in a moment. But relatedly, you opened your opinion piece at CNN last week, headlined "Gerrymandering on Steroids is the New Normal." You opened it like this, quote, "In a redistricting cycle filled with indecent affronts to democracy, the U.S. House of Representatives map drawn by New York Democrats is among the most obscene partisan gerrymanders nationwide. It threatens to wipe away four competitive districts and in a state that is that awarded nearly 61% of the vote to President Biden in 2020, all but guarantees 22 of 26 House seats will go blue. You go on to describe their map created by the New York Democrats, which I believe is now before the state Supreme Court. You described it as, quote, indefensible. My question to you, Dave Daly, really? Why? Isn't that exactly what Democrats should be doing, must be doing, to ensure some semblance of democracy, at least at the national federal level?
Leave it to Democrats to finally fight back and to fight a little bit dirty and to pick the one tactic that will never actually succeed. So, you know, I went on in that piece to say that it's indefensible, except perhaps given the need to balance out mm-hmm. a national map.
Yeah.
I certainly understand that argument.
Yeah.
But those who are going to argue that that's what Democrats should do also need to look at the numbers to realize why it won't work. It's like a revenge fantasy that can't succeed. Republicans simply control too many state legislatures in order to have Democratic gerrymanders work out in such a way that it can get you up and over 218. The Democrats maximized the number of seats that they could gerrymander
mm-hmm.
at this cycle with a 22-4 map in New York, with about a pickup of 3 seats in Illinois, mm-hmm. a pickup of a seat in Oregon, a pickup of a seat in New Mexico. So that's about 11 seats, and that is the extent of what Democrats are going to be able to squeeze out of the map through partisan gerrymandering ever. And if you want to say that that's what Democrats should do, you know, I totally understand that from a partisan tactical standpoint. Republicans, by gerrymandering Texas, Florida, Georgia, what they're going to get out of Ohio, mm-hmm. what they're going to get out of Tennessee, Kansas, New Hampshire, are going to be up around 16, 17 seats. And they could have gone harder if they'd wanted to
uh-huh.
in places like Texas and Georgia. So what Democrats need to understand, I think, are two things. First is that blue state courts are probably going to undo blue gerrymanders, so it's not going to work, even in New York, and that's just going to put further behind. And the second thing is that what they need is a national standard.
Mm-hmm.
What they need to do is put in, if you want to stop partisan gerrymandering, they need to pass a law that actually yep. does that.
Yeah,
and they've had the opportunity to do that this year, and they have, frankly, failed to do so. And that's going to haunt them.
Mm-hmm.
If Democrats want to play hardball, I'm all for playing hardball. I think they need to add states. I think they need to add U.S. senators.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need to reform the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think that the failure to do any of those things will be catastrophic over the course of the next generation. But if they want to play hardball by gerrymandering in New York, New York's blue Supreme Court is not going to allow it, and it's not going to get you where you got to go.
Let me respond to a couple of points. One, this to me is not a partisan matter. This to me is a democracy matter, which I think you actually support in your piece at CNN when you note things like, well, you say a maximally gerrymandered national congressional map by both sides is bad in nearly every way, except perhaps compared with the previous decade's map, which was rigged. So Republicans held control in 2012, even when they won 1.4 million fewer votes. In 2020, you note that Democrats won 4.7 million more votes than Republicans did in the U.S. House, and they just barely won a majority in the U.S. House, even though they received almost 5 million more votes. I mean, I don't know why you would favor such a thing. Let me use one more of your own quotes against you, David. you write in your piece at CNN where you make several great arguments, I think, against your own position. You say, if blue state courts roll back Democratic gerrymanders, but red state judges rule as partisan ideologues, a pro-GOP bias will be baked into the national map for another decade. Look, the New York Supreme Court, if they want to turn down this map, fine. I think the Democrats should try it anyway, and I agree with you. There needs to be a national standard, but in lieu of that, to be fair, it wasn't Democrats who blew that. It was Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and all 50 Republican senators who voted against a national standard. So Democrats, it seems to me, should do what they can do. If they are turned down by the courts, so be it.
No, I understand that Democrats, and, you know, I think my position in that piece is pretty clear. I think that Democrats should do what they are incentivized and mm-hmm. are going to have to do whatever they can to try to claw back, and that a national map that has been rigged for one side to win and that is not responsive is extraordinarily dangerous, especially when one party has completely broken faith with democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be really clear. Gerrymandering the hell out of New York and Illinois doesn't save democracy. It doesn't give Democrats that much of a leg up on fixing this. It's a Band-Aid when what you need is a tourniquet.
Yeah, but in lieu of a tourniquet.
Not sufficient. You know, I mean, by all means, mm-hmm. go ahead and put a Band-Aid on.
Mm-hmm.
But don't think that's going to stop the bleeding.
Well, I certainly don't think it's going to stop the bleeding. I just think they need to do what they can, even if it results in, you know, as many people think. And I don't know if this is true or not. I think conventional wisdom might work in conventional times. These are decidedly unconventional times. But conventional wisdom, of course, is that the Republicans are going to win big, going to win back a majority in the House this November, and they very well might, but doesn't it make a difference if they have a 40-seat majority versus a 5-seat majority? And wouldn't, you know, maximal redistricting, yes, gerrymandering in those blue states help narrow that that majority in the U.S. House?
I think you've got to work to solve the problem rather than to try to lessen a Republican majority. Democrats have had complete control of Washington, and they needed to use this period of time to fix these big structural flaws. And instead, they've used this period of time to tinker around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, democracy might lose a little in a slightly narrower function.
Mm-hmm.
What they needed to do was think big to save democracy, not tinker around the edges. You know, I mean, if the Dodgers win 11-9 or 11-4, it's not that big of a difference. And that's what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose the game here, you lose the game.
Well, but there's I worry that there is a difference in losing the game for, you know, one election, one wave election that you may have in response, as you often do when, you know, one party has power in the White House and in Congress, and losing an entire decade. And, you know, these numbers, these maps are going to be used for the next decade. And again, you know, you seem to argue in favor of that yourself. You say it would be the right thing for the lines in New York to be struck down. But when it comes to the national congressional maps, the right thing would also hand the GOP an unearned several seat edge heading into the midterms, with little hope that redder courts in Texas, Florida, and Georgia would do the same. So I'm wondering why
that's
it's the right thing to strike it down when these other courts are not. It seems like you're calling for unilateral disarmament. And I do hear you, because
I'm calling for a national standard that fixes the problem in New York as well as in Texas.
Yeah, me too.
Because if you fix the problem, because there are not enough New Yorks to balance out all of the Texas and the Georgias and the Floridas. So if there were an equal number of New Yorks and Texases, I think you could have this argument in a more meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats can gerrymander the hell out of these states all they want. It's not really going to help them. What they need to do is fix the overall structural problem, or else it's only going to get worse.
Well, as I'm sure you know, I agree with you. I've been fighting for that for years. Okay, well, then it sure sounds like we're disagreeing for all the agreement we're doing. How do we get there to that national standard now? I mean, again, when you had Sinema and Manchin undermine that particular project, I don't know how you get there now. And it seems like it's only going to be more difficult. Only going to be more difficult to do now with these further gerrymandered House seats.
I agree. You know, I mean, I mean, Democrats needed to win U.S. Senate seats in North Carolina and Maine during the last cycle, and
mm-hmm.
then we wouldn't be talking about Manchin and Sinema having this kind of influence. But I think they really need to go with the bigger structural reforms. If you want to play dirty, let's play constitutional hardball.
Mm-hmm.
Let's enlarge the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's add Washington, D.C. as a state. Let's add Puerto Rico as states. Let's rebalance the malapportionment of the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Let's fix all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I understand how difficult that is to do in a 50-50 Senate. And I understand the impulse to take whatever U.S. House you can wherever you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want us to pretend that that's sufficient to actually solve the problem.
I got you. Well, to put you at ease, I don't think that's sufficient. I think that is just one of many steps, many of which you cite there, David, yourself, and you have written about. For example, in Boston Globe last month, I think you wrote at the end of one piece on all of this and the outrage of how the Republicans' stolen and packed U.S. Supreme Court is gaming this entire redistricting system. You write, this is hardball politics divorced from history, consistency, morality, and precedent. The court is actively hollowing away the small d democratic authority that binds a nation together. I couldn't agree more with that sentiment, David. I think that anything and everything at this point that is legal needs to be done to step up to this fight, even if it doesn't work. I think just the show of the Democrats trying to make it happen wouldn't hurt. But yeah. I hear you. I hear you, David. I got to get out. I'm running late. Oh, always great to speak with you, my friend. Always great to both disagree and agree with you. You can and should find David and his work at fairvote.org. But buy his books. The one I can pronounce on the radio, the more recent one, is called Unrigged: How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. He's doing it. I'm doing it. I guess the fight is just how to do it. Always great speaking with you, my friend, Dave.
Hey, pleasure, Brad. Thanks for all you're doing in this battle.
Thank you, brother, and to you. You can find David on the Twitters until he's thrown off by Elon Musk at DaveDaily3. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Brad.
Okay, I saw your head exploding throughout much of those segments,
yeah,
there with David Daily.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really bad situation. It's a sticky wicket, as we would say, and I don't really see how the country gets out of this permanent minority rule from Republicans. I mean,
this is why I'm just saying that they should do everything they can. Whether it's successful or not, whether they're stopped by the courts, you know, so be it. But put up a fight, man.
Yeah, I mean, and also I think at the very bottom line of all of this is that it's going to, again, come down to voters saving the country by turning out to vote like they did in 2018. And it's going to be even harder this time,
yep,
because the margin of turnout has to be even greater than before, even greater than the margin of voter suppression and of gerrymandering. And it made me think of that old saying about how, you know, Ginger Rogers did everything that Fred Astaire did, only backwards,
yes,
and in heels.
Yes.
That's kind of what people who love democracy,
yeah,
are going to have to do in November.
Yeah.
Do it backwards and in heels and come out in greater numbers that can overwhelm and prevent this authoritarian slide that we are stuck in right now.
Well, it's just my opinion, but I look pretty good in heels. I'm just saying.
I don't think we're going to have much of a choice.
What? Yeah, no, we don't. Well, as it turns out, while I was talking to David there, it turns out, we got word from New York's top court, New York's high court, about exactly what we were just talking about and their decision on whether they are going to accept or not the Democrats' attempt to what David calls gerrymander the state of New York. Okay, let's do this. Take a break, and we will come back on that cliffhanger with news of what New York decided to do. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
I'm back in the New York groove.
Yes, I am.
I'm back in the New York groove.
I guess I'm still in the New York groove here. We are back on the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. So, Desi Doyen, I think David Daley, if I recall, had predicted that the New York High Court would, in fact, shut down this house map in New York, correct?
I think he did.
I think he did, too. And that map would have given Democrats, likely given them three more House seats. Well, looks like David Daley was right. So this just breaking from the New York Times. New York's highest court ruled on Wednesday that Democratic leaders had violated the state constitution when they drew new congressional and state Senate districts and ordered a court-appointed special master to draw replacement lines for this year's critical midterm elections instead. So, at least there will, in theory, be an orderly process, I guess, to draw these new maps, an orderly process that all sides will have to work with, unlike the obviously corrupt scheme that we talked about with David being carried out in places like Ohio right now, where the GOP redistricting commission there is purposely turning in unconstitutional maps that are being challenged by the state Supreme Court there, that are being continuously turned down by the state Supreme Court there, in order to simply run out the clock in the Buckeye State to allow for a federal court to then mandate that an old, previously GOP gerrymandered map be used this year for the election instead, because, gosh, there's just no time. While all of this is sorted out for 2024. That's Ohio, but in New York, well, it looks like they have a special master ready to go to draw an actual map that will actually be used this year. In a sweeping 32-page ruling, a divided New York State Court of Appeals chided Democrats for defying the will of the voters who adopted constitutional reforms in 2014 to curb political influence in the redistricting process and create a new outside commission to guide it. By the way, that's exactly what happened in Ohio, where voters decided to do the exact same thing in 2015, which is being ignored by Republicans. The New York judges additionally found that the congressional district designed by Democrats were, quote, drawn with impermissible partisan purpose, violating an explicit state ban on partisan gerrymandering and undercutting the party's national campaign to brand itself as the champion of voting rights. Chief Judge Janet DeFiore, wrote that for the four-judge majority, quote, though the 2014 amendments... Through the 2014 amendments, the people of this state adopted substantial redistricting reforms aimed at ensuring the starting point for redistricting legislation would be district lines proffered by a bipartisan commission following significant public participation, thereby ensuring each political party and all interested persons a voice in the composition of those lines. Good. That's the way it should be, and that, frankly, is what both Florida and Ohio voters voted for as well over the past decade, only to see the GOP legislatures and governors find ways to not only ignore the will of their own voters, but to do so in a way that appears to work around the high courts in both states to get what they ultimately want. In New York, not so. In New York, even with Democrats drawing the gerrymander and Democrats holding the majority, a huge majority, on the high court in the state, the Democrats there said nope. On the court said nope, you can't do this. It's illegal.
It's so asymmetrical.
It really is. Unfortunately, you know, Dems apparently are willing to ultimately follow the rule of law as decided by a court. Not unfortunately. I'm glad they are. It's just sad and it's pathetic that Republicans no longer play by those rules. Remember, the state Supreme Court in Ohio has now four times The Republican majority state Supreme Court in Ohio has four times rejected the Republican-drawn maps as unconstitutional in violation of the state constitution, but the Republican redistricting committee just keeps sending in these unlawful maps over and over again to the point where an unlawful map, as we discussed with Dave Daly there, will be used most likely in Ohio this year as the federal courts, somehow work things out later. I guess Ohio did not have a provision to allow the state Supreme Court to simply order a map be drawn by a special master, as is the case in New York. The verdict in New York, which is not subject to appeal, says the Times, delivered a stinging defeat to Democrats in Albany and in Washington and cast this year's election cycle into deep uncertainty. Party leaders were hopeful the court of appeals, with all seven judges appointed by Democratic governors, would overturn earlier decisions by a Republican judge in Steuben County and a bipartisan court in Rochester. Instead, the high court issued an even more damning verdict that denied the Democratic-dominated state legislature a chance to redraw the map itself. That task, the judges said, should be handled by a politically neutral special master overseen at the trial court level. The court also indicated that the June 28 party primaries for the congressional and state Senate districts would likely have to be postponed until August to allow time for the new maps to be drawn and for candidates to collect petitions to qualify for the ballot. National Democrats, the Times reports, had been counting on the New York congressional maps to pick up as many as three new seats this fall to offset redistricting gains by Republicans across the country, with Democratic gains likely to be erased or minimized in New York. Republicans are now on track to make modest gains nationally, easing their path to retaking control of the House of Representatives this fall. Wednesday's decision was a milestone in New York jurisprudence, the first time since the 1960s that the Court of Appeals has struck down district lines approved by lawmakers in their once-in-a-decade redistricting process. So there you have it.
Yep.
Good timing. That's what we're dealing with, and this is why I say those who love democracy need to stand up and do every damn thing they can this year. And hey, if the courts say you can't do it, so be it. But don't go down without a fight. Well, it looks like they're going down in New York, but not without a fight. Anyway, got to get out. My thanks to Fair Vote's David Daly, my guest today, and to, of course, the delightful Desi Doyen, our producer, as always. And thanks to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Also, drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Always glad to hear from you. And you can find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. I will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.